Maybe I'll do better this time if we gotta start over.
This is a voice recording of Mrs. Esther H. Zimmerman. It is taken at the Tano Yukon Historical Society annual meeting, 24th of April, 1969. The next voice will be that of Mrs. Zimmerman.
If you please.
I live at 146 4th Avenue in Fairbanks. I was born in Nagano, Michigan, longer ago than I care to remember. My father's name was Thomas Hawkins, and he was born in London. My mother's name was Margaret Murphy. She was born in Michigan. I'm a widow. Now, own my own home. I have no children. And I'm a housewife. I don't have any hobbies, unless it's taking care of people less fortunate than I am. And I met my first husband, George Harris, at the home of Lem Shepherd, who was an early day miner on Fairbanks Creek. We were married at the Sacred Heart Church in Seattle on November the 2nd in 1920. We went from there to California on our honeymoon. My husband left earlier than I did because the railroad wasn't completed and he didn't want me to walk between steel, which was, the railroad was started from both ends and it was several miles that wasn't completed and it had to be walked. So I waited and came on. I left Seattle on June the 16th in 1921 and arrived in Fairbanks on July the 8th in the same year. There was a seaman's strike on and we were held up at every port on account of the boat being improperly loaded. We arrived in Skagway, missed the train, had to wait there 2 or 3 days, went from Whitehorse, from Skagway to Whitehorse on the narrow gauge railway. Whitehorse and Yukon. We took the river steamer at Whitehorse and went from there to Dawson. Changed boats to Dawson and again at Tanana. We arrived in Enana and took the narrow gauge railway from Enana to Fairbanks. The interesting things along the river route were the small villages where we stopped. I was getting more discouraged along the way because I'd seen so few people and everything was so primitive, but I was favorably impressed when I got to Fairbanks. One of the things that surprised me most was the butcher shops were closed. There was no meat. The meat was coming on the same boat that we were. I went to live out, my husband was the engineer for Henry Wagner on Gold Stream. And my first home was a log cabin, a mile and a half from Fox. at what they call the water tank, where the narrow gauge train stopped for water on its way to Chattanooga. I lived there for 2 or 3 years, making one trip out to Seattle and back. From then on, I lived in a small cabin at Fox until about 1928. I came to Fairbanks to make my home. My husband, George Harris, died in 1935. I was a widow for 5 years. In 1940, I was married to A.A. Zimmerman, who was a mining man down in Pedro, and in the same vicinity where the Pedro Monument now stands. He also mined in the Circle District and on the Steves Highway on Sourdough Creek. He was the biggest single-handed operator at that time. And like most of the old-timers that struck it rich, he died broke in 1952. The interesting thing about it was making the trips out over the highway during the spring and the floods and ice glaciers and all to be negotiated. And coming back in the fall when the winter was setting in, the stomachs would be closed. You'd have to wait till they were plowed out and get back home for the winter.
Well, now, Mrs. Zimmerman, would you mind to tell us what ocean steamer you took from Seattle when you came?
I think it was the Spokane.
And what was the river steamer that you took to Dawson?
Tamino.
And you changed at Dawson to what steamer? For the downhill trip.
I don't remember. Tamino was the one we arrived in Fairbanks on.
Thank you.
Or in Nenana on. Mm-hmm.
And I believe that you said the Fairbanks of those of that day was about 1,500 population.
Between 12 and 1,500 people. There were no street lights, no sewers, no water, and
the population was burning wood then, very largely, weren't they?
Burning wood. Mm. There was, yes. Coal wasn't mined for several years after that. And all the mining was done with wood firing. And all along the river, they stopped at several places to load on wood to fire the steamers.
And now, somebody told me that your husband, Mr. Zimmerman, donated the land for what is now Birch Hill Cemetery.
That's right. Mm-hmm. He did. Mm-hmm.
By that time, was Felix Pedro was gone, but did you know Mrs. Pedro?
Yes, I was well acquainted with Mrs. Pedro.
Did she carry on mining operations out there in the area where he made his discovery, where Mr. Pedro made his discovery?
She wasn't mining at that time, but it wasn't her fault, I guess. She just didn't have the wherewithal. My husband afterwards mined that part of her property.
Do you still own some of this mining property?
No, I don't own anything. Mm. I gave it all up. I couldn't keep up the representing after my husband died.
Well, did you enjoy your life on the creeks?
Very much.
You had running water, but you just had to run down and get it, huh? All that sort of thing.
Well, my husband built a camp at Sourdough, and anybody that drives out that way can still see the buildings that are there. And we had gravity water, and the camp was completely modern, running water. And we had, of course, we had to fire with wood out there, too.
Well, was all the mining that you or your husbands were engaged in placer mining, or was there some load mining?
No, all placer.
Well, there was very little load mining in this part of the country at that time, wasn't there?
Well, it seemed there was the Hiu mine, the Clary Hill, and the McCarthy's. They were all hard rock miners.
Well, could you tell us something about the business establishments in Fairbanks, the bankers, for instance? Of course, the NC was here long.
The NC and the First National were the First National was the only bank here when I came.
And that was Stroker's in the bank by that time?
No, as I remember, there was a man, Dick Wood, and another, Mr. Hutchison, and another, George Wish. They were all in the First National.
And the railroad came into Fairbanks in 1923 or
1924,
wasn't it?
Yes, I think it was. The narrow gauge railroad went as far as Nana. It wasn't until after I was here that the standard gauge was completed. I was here when Harding drove the Gold Spike.
Were you in the crowd then?
No, that was at this side of Nenana. I have the picture of it here in my envelope.
Well, you mentioned that your husband came ahead of you and that he had to walk some distance, but do you remember how far he had to walk at that time?
No, I don't remember. But he didn't want me to walk it anyway.
Well, it wasn't maybe a day's walk or less than that, do you think?
I think it was more than that. I think they stopped overnight at what they called at that time. They called it Dead Horse. It was afterwards.
Called Healy, isn't it?
What is it?
Healy?
Not Healy, no. Frank, do you remember what that
Curry.
Was?
Curry.
They stopped at Curry overnight, I think. And then walked the next day. Greatest surprises my husband had in his mining was a cleanup, $35,000 at the old price of gold. He bought a piece of property to reserve the water rights and afterwards decided to mine it. And in 6 weeks with 8 men, they took off $35,000. I have the picture of it here, anybody that wants to look at it. That was on Twin Creek. Above where you turn off now, the Nicky site at Gilmore.
There was anything gold in there?
There was, yes. That was, well, it was above what they call golden. Maybe 6 or 8 miles farther up the Stevens Highway. And when my husband was mining there, he bought a roadhouse. It used to be where the stage stopped. There was a bar and dining room and in the rooms upstairs. He bought that for a mess house. And it was afterwards taken over by the U.S. company. And my husband sold his ground to him.
What?
The ground that he sold to the U.S. Smelling is in the vicinity of where the Pedro Monument now stands. He owned a mile and a half of ground there, and the U.S. Smelling took it over, mined it after that. And he also mined in the Circle District and also on Sourdough Creek, which was at that time the 67-mile post on the Steep Highway.
And what year was that your husband took out this $35,000?
It must have been in about 1936. It all depends on when the price of gold went up. That was at the old price of gold.
You live near Fox, and today there's only one building at Fox, a store, you know.
Yes.
Could you describe Fox to us? What was Fox like in 1922?
It was on the down when I came there. It was after the First World War, and miners didn't come back like they should have because materials were so high, and the price of gold didn't warrant them to do much mining. But when I first came there, from Fox to where I lived, which is a mile and a half from Fox, there were several people mining along the way up. The store at Fox was run door and post office. The only telephone was run by a man called Lou Madigan. There was a restaurant there and rooms ran by an old-timer called White Horse Smith. And if any of you know Leo Hardy, his parents lived on a little farm on the hillside at Fox. There was a school there with several children. Mrs. Roy Maddox was the teacher. Her son and the Hardy children and the Shea child and another one called Calistrino, a little Italian boy. There was only about five children there. My first neighbors was Mrs. Ernest Shermer and Mrs. Fred Parker. And they both lived on the railway. The railroad went as far as Gilmore. And there was a switchback there, and then they went up the hill and over to Chattanooga. It took all day for the narrow gauge train to leave. They left Fairbanks at 8 o'clock, and they didn't get back to Fairbanks that night till 8 o'clock, maybe later, all depending on what freight they carried. Usually there were several cars of wood for the miners along the way. It was a mixed train of freight, passengers, a caboose, and all the freight cars. There was no coal in the area at that time. Henry Wagner was mining on Goldstream between Fox and Gilmore. And my first husband, George Harris, was his engineer. And then, if I can think of anything more.
Could you tell us who owned the store at Fox at that time?
A man called Lou Madigan.
Today we see a few horses around Fairbanks. I imagine there were a lot of horses in those days.
Yes,
right?
there were quite a few, yes. My husband had a pair of horses. And of course, they went out with the coming of the automobile. And my husband was the first man in Fairbanks that owned a Ford touring car and a Ford truck and a Ford station wagon. They were all bought from Jimmy Barrett, who then owned the Sampson Hardware.
Well, were there any water tanks along the street for the benefit of horses at that time?
No. Just they all had to pack their water for their horses. I know my husband had to pack the water for his horses.
Do you remember when the road went in between Fairbanks and Fox? Or was that road in before the
road? That was in before I came, but it was... It wasn't much of a road. There's rain and during the summer, we were down to the hubs in the mud. But I was here when they finished the road from from Chattanooga to Circle after quite a few years.
But 1928, was it, that road went in?
Well, yeah. It was, I think, a little earlier than 28. Then they, of course, when they put in when the U.S. melting came, when they put in the Davidson Ditch, that helped along, it helped their highway along. And Mr. McDonald, father of the highway, they knew at that time, he was the engineer that, engineered their highway from Chattanooga to Circle.
That was Donald McDonald?
Yes.
The second.
Yes. Oh, the original Donald McDonald, wasn't it?
I think he was the second.
Was it? Mm-hmm. I don't remember.
The Chattanooga Railroad had already been discontinued by the time you came in.
Oh, no, that was still going.
Still going in 1920?
That was an air gauge railway.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you recall when that was discontinued, Mr. Sherman?
I can't remember. I know.
I think it ran into the 30s from, if my memory serves me correctly, from some, well, right, yeah, you know when it was discontinued.
Frank, you could contradict me maybe in a lot of these things.
Well, it was discontinued about
1936. I guess that was about it. 36. Must have been 36.
Well, Frank, it wasn't running that way.
No. Mm-hmm. 32. I came here in 32. It wasn't running
now. Goodness sake. 26, maybe.
Yeah,
26.
Yeah, 26. Yeah. Is this continued?
In
26?
Yeah, that would sound about right, because mm-hmm. then the highway was in good enough shape.
Yeah.
The dredging work.
I've got that all.
Yeah, I think you're right, because it was in 24 when the U.S. Mellings, the road was repaired for the U.S. Melling and their trucks to drive. Yeah. Chattanooga and all that.
Well, you mentioned the Ford touring car, the Ford truck, and the Ford station wagon that your husband had. What year was that he bought those?
Not all the same year.
No, no. There wasn't enough money in those. Well, I'd like to think of something more interesting, but...
Mr., how many men did you have employ at Circle? And how many buildings did you have up there?
Well, we had one mining camp at Independence Creek. That was 3 miles from Miller House. And we had three shifts. Four, five men to a shift. And later, I took over Ketchum Creek. That's 8 miles from Circle Springs. That's in one of the most beautiful countries I've ever been in.
Well, were there several other mines being operated on Ketchum Creek or in that area when your husband, when you were mining there?
No, there was nobody mining on there, but there had been, but they weren't when we were there. We were the only ones that were mining there.
Well, was there quite a bit of activity around Miller House at that
time?
Yes,
there was. There was. On Independence Creek, Bob Bartlett and his mother were mining. And above that, on Shaw Creek, Hamilton was mining.
Well, didn't Bob Bartlett's wife, folks have a mine in that area someplace?
No, not that I know of. Then the Berry people were on Miller Creek. Mastodon. They were on Mastodon Creek. They were plaster mining because their dredge couldn't negotiate Independence Creek.
That was a Clarence Berry outfit?
Yes,
mm-hmm.
That's right. The dredge is still up there.
Is that where you picked cranberries and sent them down to the hospital?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I used to pick, some days I'd pick a cream case. That's about the size of a beer case. I could pick that in a couple of hours. There were so plentiful. And blueberries all over the place.
Did you use any of those pickers that we've seen, you know, those wooden?
No, I never used a picker. I picked them by my. Picked them by hand. They said I was a good picker.
You must have been.
How did you heat your water at that time to wash?
Well, we had a copper boiler, filled it up and set it on the stove. But I had a gasoline washing machine. That was the one thing that made it easier up there. I had, this was something interesting that happened. I hung the boiler on a wall outside that back door. And I went out there one day to get the boiler to heat the water. And a bird had built its nest. And I didn't know how to get it off without disturbing the bird. They were what they call flycatchers. They were about that size. And she had already built her nest, and I asked my husband what I do about it, and he said, well, you can't disturb it. If you do, she'll never come back. But there was a shelf above that, about an inch and a half above that, and I just took the board that she built her nest on and set it up on this little shelf. She never knew it was disturbed, and she came there and hatched her little chicken. She had 5 little chicks. Another interesting thing there, we had a weasel, and when the little weasel came, she chased the old man off. She fight him like a cat. And then another, we had a family of ducks with a pond there. We had a family of ducks. It was interesting to watch them. When this weasel, the male weasel, was turning white in fall, he'd get to be the most beautiful lavender that you ever saw before he turned pure white. It was one spring we went out. And my husband went out ahead of me and told me to interview men, see if I could get. It was getting harder than the war was on. We couldn't get me, couldn't get me. So a young man came to the house one day and he said he'd like to go to work for us. Well, he was just out of the Army and I didn't think that he could do the work. I said I didn't think he could do it. And he said, well, he'd like to try. If he didn't fill the bill, we didn't need to pay him. Well, I took him anyway. And I was supposed to hire him. And the truck was in town. And I was supposed to bring out all the groceries. And the road was open, but there was a glacier at Eagle Creek. And Johnny Frasca had his pickup, and Sig Bradley had his truck with 6 tons of freight on it. And then there was my truck. And I don't know who else, there was somebody else, there was 5 of us. Well, Morris O'Leary had gone over earlier in the day, and he went over the glacier before it was still frozen that morning. He was waiting on the other side for us. So when we got there, he had walked back. We put on his high boots and walked back, and was going to help us over. So he had Sig Bradley, Oscar Bradley, go over first so that if any of us got stuck, he had the power to pull us out. Well, I was cowardly and I didn't want to go over till everybody else had gone. So this boy was driving the truck and he kept saying to me, watch the road now. You watch the road and tell me, because I've got to just turn this wheel. So everybody had gone over and the road was pretty well beaten, and down we went. Well, Morris O'Leary came back, straddled the hood of the truck, and got a chain under. And with the weight, he pulled us off, but we didn't lose it. I guess we only had broken a couple of dozen of eggs. But it was quite a trick to get us off the ice. We went on a little farther, and Bob Casey had come over with his truck, and he went nose down in one of the creeks. Well, we all had to get off and pack rocks and make a bed for it so we could pull his truck off, and then we'd get by. He left town at 7 o'clock in the morning, and I didn't get to Miller House until 7 o'clock that night. I can't think of anything more. Until the war broke out, we always had a cook at each one of the camps, but we couldn't hire anybody yet, and I had to do the cooking. But I like to cook for men because they like plain food and they always eat well. They're not picky. They want meat and potatoes and bread and butter and pie. That's their main desire. And if you have homemade bread, they don't want any desserts. And I have the name. I don't know how I got it, but I have the name to make some very good bread. And I make cinnamon rolls. And this same young man that drove the truck for me, I made cinnamon rolls. And he said, you don't need any dessert for me. He ate 6 cinnamon rolls.
Well, did he make a good hand of himself?
Oh, he did. He was a worker. He was one of the best workers we ever had.
Do you remember his name?
Phil Tompkinson.
Whatever became of him?
He's living in New Jersey. I visited him and his mother when I went east.
And when was that?
In 1955, I think.
How did he stay long in Alaska?
No, he wanted to mine, And my husband discouraged him, tried to discourage him because he thought he didn't have experience enough. But he bought a little calf and he went to, took a lease on our ground on sourdough, but he didn't have any help. We hated to see him lose out, but we couldn't help him because we had all we could do for us, where we were. And so he finally gave up. We bought the calf from him, and he went back to school. Now he's working in New York City.
Now you're talking about cooking, and of course they didn't have freezers in those days, and you, how did you keep the meat? You had
Well, we usually had what they call a cache.
Mm-hmm.
That's a, well, it was a built with the lower part was lumber, and then it was a section of all mosquito screening, and you hung the meat up there and keep for several days because it was cold, you know. And then you had a little cache built in the windows. You had a double window slide, you know, half of it you'd build, you put your food in and slide the window back and forth. And we had a bear around there, and I got up to get breakfast one morning. Everything in the cache was gone. Eggs and bacon and everything for breakfast. And the bear hung around, and I was getting pretty badly worried about it. My husband wasn't with me. I was cooking at one of the other places. And the bear was hanging around, and I had a bird dog. And the bird dog was as afraid of the bear as I was. But they told me that if I'd pile a lot of tin cans up and the bear came around and knocked him down, it'd scare him away. So that evening before, right after dinner, I took a tub and put it up in another 50-gallon, 50-pound dry can and so on. I was piling them all up, and the bear was right over there watching me. was a man working for us at the time. I thought he was very kind, and that he was an alien. He couldn't carry a gun, but he could shoot. And there were several men there that could carry a gun, but they didn't get the bear. And I told him then, I was getting pretty shaky. I said I was going to tell them they'd have to do their own cooking if they didn't get the bear. And of course they didn't want to do that. So he said, if you don't say anything about it, I'll get the bear. So he took the gun, he went out and got it. But they went into our home at Sourdough, and they just, well, there was $2,500 worth of damage done on the place. They go in one window and out the other. They would never go out the same way. And they had, there was 50 pounds of soap there. Of course, they'd eat anything. And they ate the soap. And then they went through the windows and they cut their paws, you know, climbing through. And when we went to wash up the blood around the place, they were all foaming with the soap that they had eaten. But we got two of them in one night, and we got one the next morning. We got three of them at one time. So they could make it pretty interesting.
Well, did you buy any wild meat? Wasn't moose?
No, you're not allowed. You weren't allowed to use any wild game in the camps. You had to buy all your meat.
It had to be beef or pork.
Yeah.
Domestic.
Mm-hmm. Chicken or turkey or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, those days you didn't have quite the facilities that you have now. Did you have much, did you serve much pork, much chicken or turkey?
Well, yes, we did, and we always had turkey for cleanup. Whenever we had a cleanup, why, we got a great big turkey, and it was a celebration we had. They all were tickled to death to have turkey.
Well, did you have more than one cleanup a season, or did you have every week or every month, or did you have...
Well, if we had two cleanups, we were lucky. But we usually, they prepare the ground in the fall for the next spring. You cleaned up, you did the cleaning up that season and then started in to prepare the ground for the next year. It was usually one cleanup.
And that was the great day. That was the day of a debacle, or the day of triumph, wasn't it?
Yes. Uh-huh. You knew then where the pay was and how much time would it take you to get you to take up the next, what they call take up the next cut. We had an Irishman working for us who was one of the best pipemen that my husband ever had. A pipeman is the one that does get the fine work when it gets down to the bottom where you're cleaning up the gravel and all like that. And he was very anxious that I'd learn how to pan. So, and when they're mining, they can usually tell where the best pay is. So he filled a pan of gravel for me and showed me how to do it and all like that. And he was hoping that I'd get something worthwhile. So when I got all through, I took it over to him. There was a little speck in the pan, about as big as the head of a pin. And I showed it to him. He said, "Well, you done well, didn't you?"
Well, did you ever... recover any large nuggets?
Yes, there was one nugget that was very well in that cleanup. But there was one nugget, I think it sold for $265.
Do you remember what it weighed?
No, I can't remember. I should have taken notes, but I never did.
Well, now, tell Miss Moore, did about your operation. Did you build up a use a boiler and?
My husband always used what they call a scraper. He had a boiler, and this scraper would take the tailings clear and away. If you piped them, you had to keep moving them back all the time. If you used a cap, it was the same thing. You kept moving them back and back. When you used a scraper, we had a gin pole with, you know, the drums with the cable on, the gin pole, and scraper was hauled as high as they could haul it, build up the tailings, and they were there for good and always. You didn't have to keep on moving them back. They fired with wood, and a good engineer was something to be proud of, because they knew just how to operate. But by the time that we were coming to the end of our mining years, there was no engineers to be had, so we had to either pipe the tailings or use the cat. Well, the last season that we worked, there was nobody there but my husband and I. And I piped all the tailings for that season. My husband piped the gravel into the boxes, and I piped the tailings. When I got the meals, I had a pressure cooker, and I'd leave the mine at 11 o'clock and go up and have lunch. Go back down and leave at about 5 o'clock and have dinner at 6. It was just us.
Well, did you, I don't know exactly how you say it, but did you use a high line and build up a dump?
Yes, that's the system, yes. The drag line.
Yes, ma'am. That's what I was trying to remember.
Drag line.
How many of the original buildings are still there?
Well, there's the, at Sardo, the buildings are still there. But at Pedro, the U.S. Smelting had to burn down the buildings to keep people from pilfering. But when we left there, we locked everything up. Locked the doors. And when we went back, there was nothing left. They had taken everything that was in the place. The same way at Independence. There was, you couldn't sell and you couldn't give anything away. All the pipes and the nozzles and all that, they've all been taken. There was a drum of cable that had never been unwound. And the last time I heard of it, there's only about 200, 185 or 200 feet of cable left on there. They helped themselves to everything. So there's no buildings left on Independence Creek. There are some of the buildings left on Ketchum. And all, of course, the buildings on Sardo, because Mr. Carlson, his son has a music shop on Noble. And he, no, what is it? No, Noble. I forget where that shop is. But anyway, he bought the buildings. That was all we owned, it was the buildings. We didn't own the ground. We had about 4,000 feet of pipe from 36 inches in diameter to down to 8 inches. It was all laid just like we left it. And the military went out there with repeating rifles and just pilfered that all up and down with their rifles. And turned the water on and just blew it up.
Sure, I'll look at some of the pictures.
What is it?
I'll look at some